Thus, you must realize that you have no idea before you can know the idea. We scan across all the frequencies if we want to learn anything new. Let us begin.
What has physics done for me lately?
Furthermore, the equation E is equal mc squared.
We have now acquired a fateful power to alter and to destroy nature.
That's like when you're in physics and you get a dream out saying, oh, this is a physics excursion.
Science. What is it all about?
The whole of human history all falls in the dust of one stroke of the nail file. You can't really get to grips with evolution unless you realize what an enormous amount of time.
Our own planet is only a tiny part of the vast cosmic tapestry, a starry fabric of worlds yet untold.
You're tuned into what can only be described as the best radio station on this blue dot we call Earth. It is, of course, for Triple Z, be it on your conventional wireless radio by tuning into the classic frequency of 102.1 FM, digital devices such as DAB or smart speaker, listening via the Community Radio Plus app, or streaming us live from our sensational website at 4ZZZ.org.au. And, of course, you can always listen back to us or any 4ZZZ show for that matter using the ingenious on-demand feature also found at that URL. We also now have a weekly podcast of the show for your listening pleasure, a condensed version of the show without the music, which my mum prefers. Just search for our show name, which is, of course, No Idea, spelt with a K, your weekly dose of science. And joining me today to speak about all things science, well, at the moment, it's just me. V says she's on her way. Hopefully, Izzy comes in. No Peter, no Gabe. So the two masters are OS at the moment. For those unfamiliar with the show, No Idea, we generally start the show with some weird science, then move on to some marine science, and then my personal favourite, the motor app, where I like to bang on about Formula One. It's basically just any science that sort of piqued our interest during the week. And then rounding out the show, I finish up with some space news. I'm joined by V. Good morning, V.
Good morning. Good to be here. I can see that someone's got a new haircut.
Yeah, that's right. No one recognises me anymore. Oh, well. Let's do a bit of this. I want to talk about squid star signs.
Okay.
Yeah. So let's kick it off with talking about a bit of astrology. Doesn't really fit the science theme necessarily, but let's go there. How many traits do you reckon align with this? I know you're Aquarius, V. Mm-hmm. So they reckon you're caring, intelligent, creative, independent, and unpredictable.
I feel like a bit of a clown kind of like classifying my own traits. But I would like to think I'm all of those things.
That's good. I'm Aries, so I get confident, passionate, motivated, bold, and charismatic. But I don't get intelligent or clever.
Oh, you can't have them all.
You can't take them all. Well, it turns out male squid may have a star sign of sorts, which predisposes them to become sneaky or aggressive when it comes to getting it on. University of Tokyo,
oh.
QS ranking.
Oh, it's in the 30s.
Okay. Yeah, it's 28.
Oh, okay.
Marine biologist Shotaho Sona et al. Studied Japanese spear squid and found that males' reproductive tactics depend on which month they hatch. Squid hatching early in the breeding season, between early April to mid-July, grow comparatively larger by mating time, and in so doing become what they term consorts. And that's squid that fight off rivals to impregnate the female and then guard her while she lays her eggs. Squid that hatch later, between early June to mid-August, were on average smaller, predisposing them to become sneakers, which covertly deposit their sperm on the outside of a female near where she lays her eggs in the hope of fertilising them. Male squid that hatched around July had an even chance of being a sneaker or a consort. This relative age effect has been documented in the way that children born earlier in the year have a better chance of becoming professional athletes than others in their age group because they have more time to develop before selection.
Oh, and then end up in the same age bracket.
Before this study, the so-called birth date hypothesis had only been seen in humans and a few species of fish. This latest research shows for the first time evidence of the birth date hypothesis existing in aquatic invertebrates, suggesting that male squid are locked into mating behaviours from birth. This was further illustrated by male squid born early in the season that failed to grow as expected, would still adhere to their star sign and postpone mating altogether and continue growing until they were large enough to be a consort. The researchers also noted that squid growth early in life was not so different between consorts and sneakers, even though they grew up during different seasons. More study is needed to untangle how environmental factors may affect mating behaviours in squid, and this is obviously referring to the classic nature versus nurture conundrum that scientists love to research. The study has been published in the Proceedings of the Royal Society B Biological Sciences. And that is it.
That is a truly fascinating story.
You like that?
I liked that one. I really liked that one.
We needed Peter here. Unfortunately, Peter's not here.
Yeah, Peter would have been all over it.
All over it, yeah. And it's usually this time that we listen to our friendly neighbourhood marine scientists. And this week is no exception. We've got a pre-record from back in February 2023 talking about antisocial fish.
Wouldn't you know it, your friendly neighbourhood marine scientist is coming at you from some actual seawater for once. And to celebrate the occasion, I've decided to cover something fun. So, today we're going to talk about one of the cutest symbiotic relationships in the sea, cleaner fish. As you probably learned from Finding Nemo, there are a bunch of species in the ocean, including fish, whose entire thing is cleaning other fish. And they do that because that's their food. They eat a whole bunch of nasty stuff off of frustrated fish. Dead tissues, scales, mucus, and even parasites. Obviously, this feels like a choice facial, and unsurprisingly, fish will come from fairly far away to get this wonderful treatment. One of the fish species that provides such a service are the shark-nose goby, based in the Caribbean. These guys can work solo, but they'll also set up what's known as cleaning stations, where a bunch of them team up in a little area and work together to create a spa-like location for fish to visit and rid themselves of their parasitary burdens. And these spas see the full range of customers. Parrotfish, surgeon fish, butterfly fish, other fish, 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 fish. A fully functioning reef is likely to have a number of these stations, and fish are likely to shop around at the different locations before choosing one of them, slowing to a standstill and spreading their fins to indicate that they are ready to be cleaned. At this point, the gobies descend, finding their part of the bargain – food, eating off all the bothersome bits and bobs. A delicious meal for the gobies, and a nice, relaxing massage for the customers. It may sound superficial and silly, but these cleaning stations are vital to reefs. Previous research has shown that by removing them, the diversity and the actual amount of fish on the reef massively decreases. But new research has shown that there might be a major threat to these helpful little suckers, damselfish. Damselfish are wildly territorial. They're ready to fight literally anything that gets too close. And it's for good reason. Damselfish are farmers. They quite literally farm patches of algae, pulling up weeds and encouraging their preferred variety. And with all this work comes a fierce desire to protect it. So these antisocial fish spend a majority of their time just patrolling their patch, racing after and attacking intruders, sometimes biting them viciously. And unfortunately, this can be bad news for the gobies, because sometimes the gobies set up shop a little too close to the damselfish, or sometimes the damselfish moves in close to them. After all, it is a choice spa, and they start doing the predictable thing in protecting their territory, scaring the customers away. It would be like moving in next to a bikie gang or a mob member. If your customers have any fear of grievous bodily harm, they aren't likely to hang around your shop. What isn't clear yet is whether the damselfish scare away the goby customers purely as protection for their algae patch, or if they may be trying to keep the spa all to themselves. But what we do know is that climate change may threaten to push this relationship past its balance. Climate change is obviously bringing quite a lot of changes to reefs, and one of them is a growing amount of algae. And as the physical spread of algae grows, damselfish will also expand. And this spread could further hurt cleaning stations, which could further hurt the reef by not bringing in more fish. So yeah, the same conclusion as usual, I guess. Fish are interesting and climate change is bad.
I was going to ask you, was there any difference between when it was raining and when it wasn't? But then I thought that was a stupid question because it's always raining, isn't it?
It's kind of always wet in a pond. Yeah. It is different when it dries up, I can tell you that much.
You're tuned into 4ZZZ and the show is No Idea with me, Max. Izzy, how are you, Izzy?
Yo, what's up?
Izzy, we were
bring nothing.
No. We were talking star signs before, and I was talking how squid may have star. Well, the male squids might have star signs, sort of predisposes them with their breeding habits. Mm-hmm. And you were trying to half listen in the train, but it kept cutting out, so you weren't quite sure what
it was.
It was
quite
about.
Funny because we were like going through the tunnel. I was like, "Oh, they're talking about squids." It cuts out. Come back in. Anyway, that's a star sign. And I'm like, oh, cool. Sure. Yep.
Well, you're a Gemini baby.
I am.
And your traits. See if you adhere to these at all.
Mm-hmm.
You're meant to be curious,
mm-hmm.
clever,
mm-hmm.
reckless,
mm-hmm.
chatty,
mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
and funny.
Not two-faced? Not...
No.
No, okay. Interesting.
Yeah.
Are those all traits seen in male squid?
Well, maybe. We'll have to ask them next time.
Oh, yeah. I'll, next time I see one, I'll be like, what's your star sign? And he'll run away. Cause...
Yeah. They'll tell a lot of jokes. You know,
Yeah.
Real funny squid.
Yeah.
We're going to do a story that you did, V, probably a couple of years ago now.
Yeah, a couple of years
with
ago.
With Jay.
Back in the day. When
back in the day.
Pre-record.
When Gabe forced you to pre-record everything.
And write little skits. Little, like dancing monkeys. Yes.
And this one's titled Dead Spiders. Do you remember this one at all?
Basically, some researchers used the bodies of dead spiders to act like little robots, kind of harnessing their structure and the sort of air chambers within their limbs.
And their mobility.
Yeah, it's a pretty interesting one.
Let's do it.
Hey, Jay, what are you up to?
Nothing much. I'm just going through our past stories. Gabe wants me to review all the topics we typically cover.
Wait, what? You're telling me our segment gets audited? This is community radio. We don't even get paid.
It's not like that. He just wants to know what we usually talk about so he can make us an intro. We're pretty eclectic, though. I'm not pulling out any strong themes. I guess we do have a strong tendency to talk about biohybrids, though. Do you remember the zebrafish story?
Now that you mention it, I do actually have another biohybrid story for you. Well, the specific term they're using is necrobiotics.
Necrobiotics? You mean necro as in dead?
Mm-hmm. Essentially, we've got a bunch of researchers from Rice University turning the bodies of deceased wolf spiders into claw machines for picking up small things. It's part of the soft robotics field, essentially machinery using non-traditional materials like hydrogels, textiles, chemicals, and even organic materials, as opposed to the traditional hard plastics, metals, and electronics.
V, literally, how could you say such a devastatingly horrific thing so calmly? This is too much for me to comprehend. I feel like I need 10 minutes for my brain to reset. How do you even control a dead body? Why would you want to control a dead body? Wouldn't it make just like way more sense just to use traditional machine materials like metal and plastic?
Okay, I can see this is upsetting you a little bit, but stick with me. Let me tell you a bit more about the anatomy of spiders so you can wrap your head around why soft robotics works. Unlike you and me, spiders don't have antagonistic muscle pairs. This means they don't have two sets of muscles that can push and pull something back and forth.
Now hold on, you're hurting my bio degree dropout brain.
Right. Okay, to demonstrate, try curling your arm up and then stretching it back out. To do those two motions, you're contracting two different sets of muscles. Now, if you weren't human, but rather you were a huge spider...
Finally, a concept I can get behind.
You would just have one set of muscles for curling your limbs in. In order to straighten them out, spiders don't use muscles like we do. Instead, they use hydraulic pressure.
Hydraulic pressure, like in engineering?
Yep. The spiders have a little chamber in their head full of blood. When they want to stretch out their legs, their little hydraulic chamber contracts and pushes blood all through all the valves in their legs. Think of the blood chamber as an air pump and their legs like little balloons. In their naturally relaxed state, spiders are actually all curled up. They activate their little pump when it's time to extend and move.
Is that why spiders always curl up when they die? Because they stop actively pressurizing their bodies?
Yep. When a spider dies, it can no longer control its little inbuilt hydraulic system, but all the parts and valves are still there, which is where these researchers from Rice University come in.
Oh my god, I almost forgot about that bit.
So this study was published last week in the journal Advanced Science. The researchers were able to control the spiders by sticking little syringes into the hydraulics chamber in their heads. By puffing small amounts of air in, they could get the limbs to extend and retract, like a little robot. In the words of the lead researcher, after it's deceased, The spider is the perfect architecture for small-scale, naturally derived grippers.
I ask again, did we really need to do this? Like, we've all read Mary Shelley. Has society really progressed to the need for Franken-claw machine? Like, okay, I kind of get this project as proof of concept, but what about in practice? I'm struggling to think of real-life scenarios where this would actually be the most practical option versus just using more orthodox robots or machinery.
You're probably right, to an extent, but this research is still very new. In an interview with the Daily Beast, lead author Faye Yap said, "Because the necrobotic gripper has inherent compliance and camouflaging capabilities, we envision that we can deploy it in scientific fieldwork. For example, to capture and collect small insects and other live specimens without damaging them." The paper outlines some other advantages over traditional electronic robotics, such as being biodegradable.
Okay, I guess I understand why they might be useful, although I think you also risk traumatizing entire generations of insects with stories of robot zombie predators. How strong are these spider grabbers?
The dead spiders can pick up more than 130% of their own body weight and last over 1,000 retract and extend cycles. The researchers also experimented with covering the bodies in a coating of beeswax to slow down the degradation of the dead body.
Ah, sweet man-made horrors beyond my comprehension. I literally may not sleep tonight. Like, I think actually the theme of our segment is just challenging each other with the most awful science we can find. You know, this sort of makes me think about the ethical dilemmas we face as we reach a technology level where it's totally feasible for us to, say, reanimate a deceased actor through CGI for cameos or to finish their parts if they passed away during filming a movie. There's something that rubs me the entirely wrong way about not even death stopping your body from being exploited for labor.
Are you worried about the labor rights of dead spiders?
It sounds funny, but, like, I actually am.
Well, at least you're consistent with your views.
All I'm saying is that if the dead spiders need a spokesperson to get in talks with Big Ecology, they should give me a call.
You tune into 4ZZZ, and the show is No Idea with me, Max, Izzy, V, Maximilian, and it's almost time for the Mudder app, but a bit of housekeeping before we go on. If you want to go and subscribe, as Mark did from Beaconsfield. Thank you, Mark.
Thanks, Mark.
You might have heard the baby harp seal in the other hour. That means someone subscribed. And subscribe as low as $20 right up to $500. Just go on. Oh, we got another subscriber!
Hit it! Hurry up!
Okay, we've got two subscribers for this show. Go onto the 4ZZZ website at 4zzz.org.au/support. Check it out. Subscribe. Just do it. That was Flynn from Zilmia.
Thanks, Flynn. Legend.
Legend. And if you want to text into the show while we're all here, you can text in on the SMS line, which is 0420 626 733, and your name will pop up if you're a subscriber, or say non-sub, and then we probably won't talk about you. But we did have DJ. We're talking about squid and star science during my weird science, and DJ Oz, who does randomized show on 4ZZZ. DJ Oz, what did DJ Oz actually say? He said, "Hey Max, apply star sign to 4ZZZ birthday and see what characteristics the station is supposed to have." So I went onto the wiki website to see what birth date, and we first went to air, so we're just assuming that's our birth date, on the 8th of December 1975. So December 8th of December puts us into Sagittarius star sign, and I then did a search, and it says a dynamic blend, this is 4ZZZ by the way, is a dynamic blend of passion, curiosity, intensity, and adaptability. I reckon it ticks all those boxes pretty well.
Yeah, I reckon. It's very dynamic. I think certainly adaptable.
That's moved around a bit.
Let's do this.
Okay, it's time for the best part of the show. Loosely defined as science, yeah, you already know. Everybody listens to 4ZZZ just to hear us talking about what Butters just did. Subscriptions just keep rolling like the tires on a car. But something tells me that our science careers won't go far. But unlike an engine, I will keep you in suspension. We're all here to hear him talk, so let's give him attention. You're not ready for when he starts rapping. Gonna hand the mic to Max, and I'm not talking band stamping.
It's lights out and away we go.
SV Energy, Shane Van Gisbergen, raced on the weekend at Dover International Speedway. Shane finished on the lead lap in position 18, racing in the NASCAR Xfinity Series. Ideally, we want to see him finish higher up the order, but to finish on the lead lap in any NASCAR series is a job well done. Formula E raced in Monaco on the weekend. In the lead up to the race, Formula E announced that the current Gen 3 cars will be getting an update, and they're calling it Gen 3 Evo, and the cars will feature all-wheel drive and be able to accelerate, you ready, Izzy? Right. Faster than current F1 cars.
Ooh.
Hey.
That even got V excited.
Handling, of course, is another issue where Formula One still reigns supreme.
And the good thing about Monaco is that it's the one track that both Formula One and Formula E do.
Yes.
So we can actually do a direct comparison between the two series.
Like for like, yeah.
Like for like. So if we look at the pole position, this was done by Pascal Verlaine.
Mm-hmm.
He's an ex-F1 driver, isn't he?
It probably is.
I want to say he is. I want to say he raced for Haas.
Mm.
And he took pole with a 129.8.
Mm. And a Formula One car does it in?
111.3 by Max Verstappen last year.
Except the difference is they said there was a lot of passing in the Formula E series.
Of course, like the closer racing probably.
Yeah, because they're narrower cars and shorter cars as well, where the Formula One cars are like 2 meters wide. And
then when they're basically like a SUV almost in terms of their footprint.
They are. And they're saying that the Formula One cars have unfortunately outgrown the Monaco circuit.
Yeah, which makes then your qualifying order all the more important.
Yes.
What I do think is interesting, and to that point, is that the gap between the outright pole time and versus the fastest lap, which was set by New Zealander Nick Cassidy in his Jaguar, he got a 131.5 for the fastest lap. So that's actually not too far off the pole position. That's only about, you know, less than 2 seconds off.
Yes.
Whereas in the Formula One, you actually have like a 4 second gap between pole position and the fastest lap. So it's just like the idea of race trim being completely different in Formula One and having that like being able to actually push the Formula E cars closer to their peak in race conditions, I think is really exciting.
It is. And we'll have to wait for a couple more races until we see them in Monaco, because we've got the Miami and the Italian one before that, where lots of updates are coming, apparently. So that'll be fun. So 26th of May for the Monaco F1. We're all looking forward to that. MotoGP also happened on the weekend, this time in Spain. Aussie and Queenslander Jack Miller secured another DNF. A Miller special, as Gabe likes to call it. Okay, let's do the big one, F1. The big news this week has been the signing of Haas driver Nico Hülkenberg to Audi. Audi will officially take over the green team, Kick Sauber, in 2026. It looks as though the German outfit wants to get ahead of the game and bed in at least one driver before the new regs kick in 2026. So Nico will be driving for Kick Sauber next year, which automatically parachutes him into the Audi F1 team for 2026.
Now, this is interesting because this is a reunion between Hülkenberg and Seidel, who is now, I believe, is the
team principal.
He's not the team principal. He's one above the team principal.
Oh, can you be that?
Yeah.
Okay.
He's Audi's man in Sauber, basically.
Okay.
And so they won Le Mans
back in 2017.
2015.
Yeah,
15. Yeah. Okay. Because they tried to get Ricciardo, but Red Bull were like, we're holding on to Ricciardo.
Yeah.
So then Hülkenberg got to race for Porsche at the time.
Mm.
And take a cheeky win at Le Mans.
We got a text in just quickly from Matthew. He wants to know, hello there. Isn't the Formula E Monaco layout shorter than the F1 layout?
Ah, it used to be.
Yes, it used to be.
Once the battery technology got to the point where they could actually do the full distance,
yes,
they then extended the course length to...
It's the same course as the F1 course.
It's a tiny bit shorter. I think they still do something a little different, but it's now far more representative.
And where the Formula One's race for an hour and, say, 30 minutes, the Formula E only race for about 58 minutes.
Yeah, so
they get a bit sleepy.
Yeah, so 78 laps for Formula One and then 29 laps for the very sleepy E3.
Now, the decision on Sainzy going to Audi? How far away is that, you reckon?
I think he's holding out for Red Bull. He wants a little bit more money from Red Bull, by the sounds. That's what Helmut Marko said publicly, and he's not one to mince words.
Yeah, yeah.
He said that Red Bull can't actually match the, like, stratospheric number that Audi have put in front of him.
Sure.
So I think Red Bull are probably happy to stay within their stable at the moment. They know their car's very good. I don't think it's going to be make or break in terms of, even if they lost Verstappen, Perez has even sort of worked it out a little bit, you know. And he still got second last year as well.
True.
We have to remember that if Verstappen wasn't in the championship, Perez would have been a world champion.
Okay.
So I think... I think Sainz will find himself in a very similar position to where Ricciardo found himself in 2018, where clearly he's a very talented driver, but there isn't really a seat for him at a top team right now, so he has to go somewhere else if he wants to stay on the grid.
Except Williams.
Yeah. Would he go to Williams, do you reckon?
Nah, never. Okay, the other big news, Red Bull's chief technology officer, Adrian Newey, is set to part ways with the winning team. Has been rumoured he will either go to Ferrari or Aston Martin or maybe just retire because he's 65 at the moment. So we reckon he's going to go to Ferrari. Is that the latest?
That's the prevailing rumour. The latest is that the lawyers are working out with Red Bull.
Oh, for early exit.
Out.
That's right.
Yeah, to try and extract him out early.
Yeah, because he's booked in till 2026 at Red Bull, isn't he? So he's got to get out of that contract.
If he wants to have any impact on the 2026 Ferrari, which is ostensibly why they would want him. Because it's a really interesting listen, his Beyond the Grid podcast, if we're allowed to plug external things. But it was interesting that he said the only thing that he really went hands-on with the current regs was, like, where do I put the wheels?
Yes, that's
yeah,
right.
What's the wheelbase of this car?
Yeah, and he learnt that from IndyCar when they had aero downforce, didn't they, where it sucks itself to the ground.
Yeah, exactly. So the idea being that if you put the wheelbase correctly, if you get the suspension right, you're locked in with all that for a season. You have that advantage. Whereas if you get the bodywork somewhat wrong, it doesn't matter. You can sort of patch that out.
AKA Mercedes.
Yeah, exactly. But the problem is Mercedes still had the underlying packaging correct. So even when they did, they went from zero side pods to actual side pods, they were still at a significant disadvantage because there were underlying problems with the package. So that would be very important for Ferrari if they can get Newey in as early as possible so he can actually make those early critical decisions.
For 2026, yeah, 100%. Now, while we're talking about Ferrari, this weekend they're racing in Miami. And because Ferrari's been in the United States selling cars for the last 70 years, they've come with a different colour scheme on their car. They're going to feature a lot of blue. One is called Bandit, and one is called Bluey.
Oh.
Not really. I Australianized that. But
what? What? Are you just lying now? No, we're just spreading misinformation on
false
Air Max.
News.
It's actually called Azura La Plata and Azura Dino are the two shades of blue. And they'll be having... So both their cars and the uniforms and the racing suits will all feature... that these two shades of blue.
I'll look them up.
So, unfortunately, Miami's not in our time zone, so expect to watch the race on 6 a.m. Monday morning, which is... I can do that, I reckon. That doable?
Sure.
Okay. And the F1 Academy is also racing easy this weekend. The Women's Feeder Series. So that'd be cool to watch.
I'm very excited.
Sale GP. Oh, are we finished with Formula 1? Sorry, Maxi.
I think so. Yeah, it's I believe that's the second round of the F1 Academy. I think the last was Saudi, wasn't it?
Yes, it was.
Yeah.
Sale GP is also on this weekend, returning to the iconic island of Bermuda. Has anyone been to Bermuda before?
Do you think we've been to Bermuda, Max?
I haven't. It'll be round 10 of the season 4 with a special opening day performance from Kez the Band. For those unfamiliar with Kez's brilliant work, it goes something like this. See what he did with that rhyming from bunga to thunder? Fantastic. The 77 report. Last week, Valtteri Bottas competed in the 170-kilometre gravel bike race held in South Africa. Valtteri finished sixth for his age group, which automatically qualifies him for the 2024 UCI Gravel World Championships. So Bottas is now officially in two world championships, Formula One and cycling. Meanwhile, the Phoenix, Roman Grosjean, raced at Barber in his IndyCar. He finished 12th. ex-supercar champion Scott McLaughlin won the race with Aussie Will Power finishing second, completing a 1-2 victory for Team Penske. Any more on the Motorwrap this week?
I think there's two more things.
Mm-hmm.
I just realised we forgot the other big rumour this week.
In Formula 1.
Yeah, in Formula 1, yeah. Which is the one that just doesn't go away. Max Verstappen to Mercedes.
Yes.
Okay. So the rumour is that after the Miami Grand Prix, they're going to have a bit of a sit down. And basically, Mercedes are going to open up the checkbook and try and tempt Verstappen to leave Red Bull.
And what you
given reckon? Given the movement with Newey and the general instability in the team at the moment.
Yes,
there's a bit of I think ruptions. If you're Verstappen, I think it's worth considering being somewhere else, you know. Because if you can get a championship somewhere else as well, that goes down in the history books. Probably all the greatest world champions won for more than one team.
Yeah.
And also from Mercedes' point of view, it makes sense to open up the checkbook because where do you go from Lewis Hamilton? Like, who else can you get? Where do you go? The only place you can go, really, is to Verstappen if you want like for like.
Exactly.
And then the other bit of news is that today marks 30 years since the untimely death of Ayrton Senna during the San Marino Grand Prix in 1994.
Disappointing, wasn't it?
Yeah. So the San Marino Grand Prix this year is on the 19th of May, and my understanding is that they will be doing something in honour of Ayrton.
Cool.
Nice.
And also, his Netflix series is coming out. They're going to do a Netflix series about him.
Senna, another one. Okay.
Yeah, another one, yeah. Okay, cool. By the same people, I think.
But they found some more material.
Yeah.
Clearly.
Tyrannosaurus, how many can you name?
I can't name any of them.
Rex, maybe? Tyrannosaurus Rex?
T-Rex, yeah, I can do that
one. Yep, all right, there we go. So we've got one. And that's how many there's supposed to be, Max, in the genus Tyrannosaurus.
With the baby arms.
Unless a couple of researchers who put out a paper yesterday or 2 days ago have anything to say about it. With the baby arms, that's right. But we're not talking about their arms, Max. We're talking today about their femurs, their thigh bone, and their teeth. Because they reckon, based on analysis they did of the femur and teeth of 37 specimens of Tyrannosaurus, they reckon there's three species.
You tuned in to 4ZZZ, and the show is No Idea with me, Max, Izzy, V, no Peter,
no Peter,
no Gabe, no Jay.
No boring adults. It's just the cool kids.
What do you got for us, V?
I'm here today with a story about how wood frogs in America have evolved in response to the use of road salts. Does anyone here actually know what road salts are?
Road salts, yeah. They use that during winter to get the ice off
off
the road.
Yeah, to get the ice off the road.
Okay.
It's just a big...
And that's why a lot of cars in the 70s and 80s are all just rusted out from the salt underneath the cars.
Well, there you go. Yeah. I was expecting other Brisbaneites to have a similar level
I read that in Diary of a Wimpy Kid.
Okay. Cultured.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Anyway, road salts, like you said, they're used to de-ice icy roads and parking lots to kind of reduce car accidents and slippering around. But pretty predictably, this can also have a lot of unintended effects on surrounding water sources when those salts, you know, run off or leach into them. And there's a variety of there's like a whole gamut of studies really that show the varying effects, being like killing animals, stunting the growth of fish, making them more prone to diseases, and even causing sex changes in frogs.
Whoa!
Yeah,
they're turning the freaking frogs gay!
They're turning the freaking frogs gay and trans and everything in between.
Frogs are like the new canary, aren't they, really?
They really are.
New canary.
I would say they're very sensitive animals.
They are.
Yeah. Interesting.
Anyway, so this study is also in frogs, and it was published back in March in the journal Ecology and Evolution by a research team from the Rensselaer Polytechnic Institute in New York State. QS ranking.
Oh, is it a range?
It's not a range.
Uh-oh.
300.
Okay.
258.
494.
I win.
The US effect is really affecting, isn't it?
Huge. Really wide margin.
A big delta.
Yeah. Really.
Ooh. What do they say, though?
Win is generous. Anyway, so the study looks at how wood frogs evolved over time to survive in increasingly salty waters. Basically, what the researchers did is they collected frog eggs from different wetlands of various salinity levels. I think they took like maybe 9 lots from 9 different spots. The saltiest wetland was one next to a parking lot constructed 25 25 years ago. And over those 25 years, runoff from the road salts made that wetland's water nearly 100 times higher than in pristine wetlands. So that's like, yeah, a magnitude of 100 times. That's pretty crazy. Once the researchers had the frog eggs, they actually hatched them and then exposed them to salty water and found that the frogs from the super salty wetland had much higher survival rates than tadpoles from other wetlands.
Whoa!
And so, you know, just kind of working back from that 25-year lifespan of that car park, the researchers estimated that the frogs in that wetland had something like 10 generations to evolve, you know, this kind of super adaptation to salinity, which is really cool because you often think of evolution as something happening over like thousands or even millions of years.
That's hardcore.
It's pretty hardcore. Now, the research team says that these findings shouldn't be taken to say that climate change and pollution are inconsequential and that nature will just adapt. That's absolutely not the takeaway here. To quote the lead author, Rick Rillier, the fact that these amphibians rapidly evolved to deal with high salt levels suggests that we have time to avoid extinction in this species and probably many other species. So, you know, it's a little bit of a hopeful end, but it's also a call to action. And what better way to do that than to study and understand the effects of human activity on this earth?
Yeah, wow. It's such a, like, a, especially it doesn't affect us here in Australia, but it's such a small thing. Like, you wouldn't think
with
that the rock salt,
the consequences, yeah.
You would think that putting salt on the ground to defrost ice doesn't have any effect on the wildlife, I guess, to a certain degree.
Yeah, especially when we're talking about water sources that, you know, are often a lot smaller than like lakes or rivers. Like these wetlands, they're much, much lower in water volume. And so the amount of salt runoff into those would be proportionally much, much higher. It would have a much greater effect there than in a larger body of water.
Whoa. That's sick, V.
Little microcosms.
Thanks for that story.
Thanks for listening.
In the depths of Fortitude Valley, the team behind Netherworld have birthed a new beast. Lost Souls Karaoke, a purgatory waiting room and bar, will lead you to one of five chilled private karaoke realms designed by Nelson Gibbons, where you will sing for your soul. Book a room and put your soul on the line from Tuesday to Sunday via lostsoulskaraoke.com. Lost Souls Karaoke are proud sponsors of 4ZZZ.
You tuned to 4ZZZ and the show is No Idea with me, Max. Izzy V.
No Idea Space News.
You know it. Psych is a NASA mission that will explore a 200-kilometer-wide solid metallic asteroid called 16-Psych. The mission is also being used as a demonstration called the Deep Space Optical Communications, or DSOC. DSOC aims to show that it is possible for laser communications to be conducted across cosmic distances, which means higher bandwidth and much faster connection between Earth and space probes. Communication rates should be between 10 to 100 times faster than what we currently do. On April 8, it happened. Psyche, situated around 230 million kilometers away, which is bigger than the space between Earth and the Sun.
Damn.
Yeah.
Sheesh.
Successfully transmitted data back to Earth. It also managed to beam back information gleaned straight from the spacecraft. This means that the DSOC transceiver actually interfaced with Psyche's radio transmitter and sent back concrete engineering data contained within the craft. Because what they did last time, they just sent a cat video.
Naturally.
This time it's actual engineering data.
Oh, nice.
But we prefer the cat video.
What, what?
Starliner, this is Boeing's answer to the SpaceX Crew Dragon. Before it can make its way to the ISS on first test run with people on board, this basically has to happen.
Steve, could you move the Chimera? I need to get the Tirana out so I can get to the Commodore.
I'll have to get the keys to the Cortina, but I'm going to move that Chimera.
Yeah, watch the boat, mate.
Yeah.
So, SpaceX, do you know what? It's from the castle, the film Castle. No?
Nope.
Australian film. Hey?
I know the castle.
Yeah, cool.
The
castle. Anyway.
Distracted by it. Aussie accent jump scare.
So, what they have to do, they have to move a cargo Dragon spacecraft. It has to undock from the space station, which it now has, apparently. Okay. And then the four members of the Crew 8 mission then have to board their SpaceX Crew Dragon and move it from one port to another port on the Harmony module. And then that frees up the forward port on the ISS that is the only approved one for Starliner.
So it's like parking in like the car park at Four Triple Z where someone has to move out.
Do you know who owns the Gemini? Because I got to get the exactly.
So it's just a parking. Even in space, you can't escape traffic. Jesus.
NASA announced on April 25 the completion of a 2-day flight test readiness review for Starliner. Officials approved plans to proceed with the crew flight test, or CFT mission, with a launch scheduled for May 6 from Cape Canaveral's Space Launch Complex, SLC-41. And then have some backup dates for May 7, 10 and 11 if May 6 doesn't work out.
Interesting.
On Mars, there's been images of spider-like features on the South Pole. And they've been photographed by the European Space Agency's Mars Express Orbiter. This spectacle appears when spring sunlight warms layers of carbon dioxide deposited during the dark Martian winter. As it warms, carbon dioxide ice in the bottom layer turns into gas, which builds up and eventually breaks through overlying ice up to 1 meter thick. The released gas carries dark dust from the underlying ground upward, ultimately forcing the dust to explode out of the top ice layers like water from a geyser before settling on the surface. This creates the cracked spidery formations measuring from 45 meters to 1 kilometer across.
That's
that
cool.
Is so awesome.
Can we turn that into a claw machine? Can we? That's a reference to an earlier story. Listen back on 4ZZZ.
Moon tree saplings are being handed out to select recipients. In August 2023, NASA put out a call for interested educational and community organizations to apply to grow a moon tree. The space agency chose recipients based on their ability to care for the various tree species. More than 1,000 seeds, including loblolly pines, sycamore, sweet gum, Douglas fir, and giant sequoia, were flown on board the Artemis 1 Orion spacecraft as it made its way around the moon. But this is not the first time. A similar thing happened back in 71. On the Apollo 14 mission, astronaut Stuart Rosa took some seeds along for the ride, resulting in roughly 120 moon trees being planted back on Earth.
Whoa. What? Yeah. That's cool. Mm. That's cool. We're just looking up a photo of the spider.
On Mars.
Yeah, the spiders on Mars. I thought it would be like bigger, but they look like little guys. They're just like little, they're almost star shaped.
Yeah, I mean, if you look at the scale, it is pretty big.
Sorry, I didn't see that. Wow, okay. Yeah. That's cool. That's super cool.
Image from very high up.
Imagine seeing that with no context though. Like, you pull up a satellite photo and it's just that, and you're like, oh shit.
We found life.
We gotta go.
You tuned to 4ZZZ, and the show is No Idea, but not for much longer. We usually get Gabe to sign us out, but I'll try and harness some of his inner energy. He loves this bit of the show. He gets to talk. Thank you, Izzy, for your stories today.
All my stories that I contributed to. No, thank you for you guys and your weird, wacky star signs and salty frogs. Whatever else.
Yeah, okay.
So a lot to look forward to next week when you catch us at the same time.
Or you can get the podcast, which is probably only about 10 minutes long.
There's a lot of music in the last 2 hours. On anywhere that you find podcasts, give us a 5-star rating if you can, please.
And we'll speak to you next week.
See ya.
I'm a goddamn marvel of modern science.